Hello, everybody.
Hello. Welcome to Fate's Wide Wheel, Quantum Leap Podcast. I'm Sam.
I'm Dennis.
And we're here this week
to talk about the most important episode in the history of Quantum Leap.
The most beloved.
The most important.
That's right.
How you doing, Sam?
It's Americanization of Machiko time.
Yeah.
I'm good. It has been a busy, busy week. We have talked a little bit about it on the podcast and on Twitter, we are in the process of moving, and just because of the way things are and trying to kind of like figure everything out, we realized that the best thing for us, instead of trying to find a place while we still lived in our condo, would be to, of course, sell the condo first and then buy a new place. Course, to do that, we needed a place to stay. We got lucky because my wife's parents ended up moving to the area, so we're actually staying with them, which has been great. We, you know, feel so fortunate for that, and it's just required a lot of, you know, back and forth, especially for me this week, you know, driving into the city, which isn't bad. I mean, it's like, you know, 30-minute drive, unless traffic is bad, in which case it can be like an hour. And, you know, just finishing up all the packing and, you know, moving stuff and everything. We've hired movers to come in and get like all the big stuff, but it's just, yeah, it's just been a lot. It's been a lot. Yeah. And, we haven't been here for quite a week yet. It's, you know, so far so good. Everything's going really well. It's just been very tiring. And of course, you know, with our scheduling for the podcast, it's definitely played a part in trying to figure out like, okay, when do we do this? You know, when do we have time for this? And, so that's why we're a little late this week. But we've got some exciting stuff coming up next week that we'll talk about a little bit later. So, yeah, you know, stuff is good though. You know, the kids are good. Mm-hmm. Jess is good. I can't complain. How about you?
We're doing pretty good. Just trucking along pretty much as normal. We're getting ready to go on vacation next week. Well, I'm going to be out because we're going to bank some episodes in some way. But we're going to be in Michigan for a few days. Then we're coming back here, staying back here in Southern Illinois for one more night, and then headed down to Oklahoma for more family. I've never been to Oklahoma. So,
neither have I.
So that will be a fun adventure. But yeah, a couple more regular days, packing up, and then we're heading out.
Right on.
Yeah.
Right on.
But we got some exciting news. First, let's do our housekeeping. Yep. Find us on the web, FatesWideWheel.com, on all the socials. Getting close to 4,000 followers on TikTok. Wow. If you're making your way from over there, welcome. I've had a lot of fun. I cannot believe I've been sitting on like TikTok for like 2 years with Quantum Leap because I was like, oh, it's hard. But like once people start commenting and you can do like, you know, video responses to people's comments, like it's just been... Yeah. It's been really easy to come up with comment and talk about stuff and make connections. And
it's been fun to watch because I'm just an observer. You know what I mean? Like you're the one that's doing all the work. But, you know, I'm watching all the videos and it's been fun for me to watch. And, you know, 99.9% of the time, I'm going to agree with, you know, most of what you have to say anyway. And if it's informational, obviously you're not going to steer people wrong. So it's been fun to watch. It's been fun to see some of the comments. I haven't had a chance to like engage really, you know, with any of that as of yet. And I'm going to start doing my own at some point here, but you know, for now it still just looks like an uphill climb.
I know. Yeah. It's a learning curve. Yeah. But let's thank our supporters as always, Jill Wilson, Dana Bias, Oddly Specific with Audra. She changed her name on Patreon. So I think that's her Facebook page. That's her thing. So I think that's how she wanted to be introduced.
Right on.
Oddly Specific with Audra, Christopher Redman, Rich Bork, Karen Saxon, Amy Holtkamp, Larry Trujillo, and can't remember if I mentioned Jill Wilson or not at the beginning. I'll mention her again at the end. She was a one-time donation. So she's not on our regular list of patrons because otherwise I just pull the list of patrons up. Jill was a special outlier.
We love you just the same.
There, we love you. We love you just
the same. Yeah,
yeah. We love you just the same. But yeah, thank you so much. Before we get into this week, the Americanization of Machiko. Just a couple quick updates today. Martin Garrow on Instagram, he posted day one, shot one of what he called episode one of Quantum Leap. If you zoomed in on the clacker, you saw Thor Freudenthal's name, which as the hashtag show reported is the director of the new Hope Diamond pilot, we will call. And not much more. It looks like we're on a street from the cars. I think we're still solidly back in the 1980s, which seems to make sense. Because it's such an Easter egg for old fans, I will genuinely be surprised if the year is still not 1989.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because, I guess the production number does say 101, but that's still, he doesn't necessarily call it episode one.
Doesn't it? I thought he said like C1, whatever. He said something very heavy implies like, oh, that this was.
That's true. Cause he does say coming September 19th.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, who cares? Whatever happens. As far now, as
you were,
what
like,
they're shooting, you're
in air, but you were saying in the thread today, like information from the Observer seems like on NBC's lot, they don't quite know what's up.
Yeah. I've been in contact with the Observer quite a bit, and they've been, busy with other projects, and they haven't even necessarily been, in Los Angeles this whole time, because they've been on location with a couple of other projects. But that said, what they've told me is they were able to confirm, obviously, that it is shooting in LA, that as of right now, it's shooting exclusively on backlots and sound stages. They're not doing any location work. That could easily change, of course. And that, as far as they know, they've heard nothing about like what episode is going to air on September 19th. And there are a lot of other people, on the NBC Universal lot that don't know anything either. So it seems that there's been like some people were surprised when they even mentioned it, like when they were just sort of like, hey, what, with this new reshoot, what's happening with that? And the responses they got, varied from just sort of like, I have no idea they already shot the pilot. So but the thing is that one of the things that they kind of even said as a disclaimer is like, I haven't had a chance to talk to anybody actually working on the show yet. I'm just talking to other people who work on the lot. So it could just very well be that there's no reason, there's no reason to kind of like run it up the flagpole for the entire network and for everybody who works there and every production assistant or whatever is running around being like, oh yeah, they're reshooting the Quantum Leap pilot. So it doesn't necessarily mean anything at all. It was just one of those things where I was kind of like, oh huh, I guess they don't know. And as of yet, we have still had no like 100% official confirmation that that's what's happening. Even though it is likely that that is what's happening. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. The really interesting thing is that they start shooting now. Comic-Con is in 2 weeks. They've already obviously shown footage from the original pilot at the upfronts. Sure. So it's kind of an interesting situation to be in where they probably won't have, I mean, they could have, they'd have to do kind of a rush job, but they might not have new footage available for Comic-Con if they're even doing anything at Comic-Con. That's always just been a big, assumption, supposition of mine. But, I don't know. I'm just looking forward to whatever other teases we get as the week goes on and, into next week. Cause I think that as they shoot, there's bound to be some stuff that comes out. Right. I know that like Kaitlyn Bassett and Ernie Hudson were all tagged like in that photo that Martin Garrow put up. Obviously Raymond Lee is, involved as well. I think Mason Alexander Park, they might actually be out of the country right now. So I don't know if they're just not, I don't know. I don't know if they're just not involved at this particular point or what. I could have been misreading something, but they posted something on Instagram that was from London. I know that with Sandman coming out, maybe they're doing some promotional stuff for that. I have no idea.
Sure.
So yeah, that's all I got.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. Yeah. I was just checking. I can't find her right now. I'm going to check here real quick. As the last time I checked, I still had more followers on Instagram than Caitlin Bassett, but I have a feeling that that's going to change very quickly. I still have about 500 more followers. That's going to change. I promise. Yeah. That's going to change.
Definitely going to change.
That's going to change here in a couple months.
I cannot wait to see what she does with Addison. I really mean that. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what it is, but just seeing her red carpet interview during the upfronts, getting to see just a little bit of her social media interactions with others, seeing a couple of the behind the scenes shots that we've seen so far. I don't know. I've got a really good feeling about the work that she's going to do. I'm so excited. We're like 74 days away, I believe, from September 19th, which is just nuts to me. That seems so much sooner than I had anticipated.
I know. Yeah. Well, should we get into it?
Before we do, actually, wanted to just mention the teaser trailer. You know,
we
Twitter, basically broke on Reddit. A Reddit user posted a rather awful, but nonetheless, we're grateful for it. iPhone video of their television. It was kind of a bit of a weird angle. And it was the first, video footage basically that we've seen like officially released as a trailer on the network for Quantum Leap. And it fits so well, it just felt kind of very much in line with the opening credits that we were used to for, the original series, showing, snippets of historic events, showing the Challenger go up, showing a scene from Waco, showing the Bronco chase with O.J. Simpson, and then, of course, having a couple of flashes of footage from the original pilot episode, the earthquake episode, and then ending on, a shot of Ben as he leaps. And getting like the new
accelerator style.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to say this. If I have one minor beef with the trailer, I got to have at least one minor beef with the trailer.
Why not?
Like clearly the footage of Raymond Lee is not footage from the episode. That's like them pulling Raymond Lee aside somewhere. It's like, hey, here, stand here, do this thing for a minute. We're going to do a thing. They have not shot footage yet, at least not footage that they're willing to show of like him actual, like stepping into the accelerator within like the course of an actual episode.
At the risk of spoiling things, I'll just say no comment. But one of the odd things too that we can now mention is that there has been a release, kind of a re-release of the teaser, if you will. The folks over at the Quantum Leap podcast put up a nice 4K version of the trailer, and don't want to make anything out of this because who knows what the exact reasons were, but they've removed the Waco clip and replaced it with something else,
like a stampede or something.
I'm not sure. I couldn't identify it right away, and to be frank, sure, I think I've only watched it twice because I've been busy, but
probably comes down to like maybe they didn't have the rights to that particular footage. And then realized it and whatever, and they pull it out.
All that said, it was just super cool to finally see some stuff. And, I'm just so jazzed, for, what they've created, visually already, and for how it feels, just again, it feels very much like Quantum Leap to me. I like the updated effects and the sound effect. It's exciting. It's exciting times. And I think that, over these coming weeks, we're going to get a lot more little bits and bobbles that'll come out. I'm looking forward to dissecting it and talking about it and, hearing what other people think about it as we go forward.
Yeah. My favorite thing is like, jumping back to TikTok for a second, is like, I usually post like 1 to 2 videos a day. And I usually get the comment on every single video of someone that's new, and they're like, wait, there's a reboot?
Yeah.
There's a new series? I'm like, hey, welcome. Welcome to the party.
Yeah. We've had a couple of new followers on Twitter and people, saying that they found us on TikTok and that they're listening to us now, which is great. Again, thank you for your efforts. But I'm just so excited by the fact that, you know, it's easy kind of living in our little bubble with this podcast and, you know, talking with other podcasters and people involved kind of with the Quantum Leap fandom. All of us are just kind of like, yeah, you know, this is happening and you know, have known it for, you know, 4 or 5 months now. But there are a lot of sort of more casual fans or people that might not even call themselves fans, but have an awareness of the show that had no idea that this was mm-hmm. happening. So to kind of be the ones that, you know, get someone aware of it is exciting and shows that, you know, we're kind of doing our job, you know, because again, we want people to be excited. We want people to be watching and talking about it and having as much fun as possible. You know, and whether or not we can reach the great heights that Deborah Pratt has for the fandom and create like the Quantum Leap multiverse or whatever, who knows?
Oh, sure.
But we're sure as hell going to make sure that there's, you know, people that are excited about it.
Yeah, I was going to say we're doing the Lord's work, but we're doing Ziggy's work.
Yes.
Doing Ziggy's work. All right, should we get into it?
Or whatever. Yeah. Yes, I think
your favorite episode, The Americanization of Machiko, August 4th, 1953. IMDb description, as a returning sailor, Sam brings home a Japanese wife and must battle the prejudice of his hometown and his own mother. Now, if you are new to the podcast, and if you're sensing a little sarcasm here, Sam, fill us in on your thoughts on the Americanization of Machiko. Or your old thoughts. I don't know. We haven't talked. I don't know if you have new thoughts.
Yeah. So, the first time around, and you have to understand, there's kind of a before times Sam and an after times Sam. There's a before I quit drinking, before therapy, before the pandemic version of Sam that could be a little bitter and aggressive and just angry. And I still possess those qualities. Obviously, it's not like I've changed completely. But now there's kind of an after times Sam, fatherhood Sam. Mm-hmm. And so I think that I do have a little bit of a softer approach to some of this stuff. That said, in that particular episode of our podcast about this particular episode of Quantum Leap, I got pretty savage with it. I did not like it. I ranked it. There were two episodes, I believe, in particular that I really raked over the coals. And Portrait for Troyan was the other one.
Yeah.
There were some season 5 episodes I wasn't too kind to either, I think. But those two in particular were ones that I was pretty savage about. And I can't say that I've taken a full 180, but I was surprised how there was a stretch of this episode that I felt much more on board with, mm-hmm. Much more into, and then it falls off the rails. And I think that it became a running joke anytime we wanted to talk about my favorite episode, you know, mm-hmm. to the fact that there are listeners who have interacted with us on Facebook and Twitter, et cetera, that have even joked about it, mm-hmm. with me, which is great. And I love them for it. But I will say that this time around, I did have a bit of a different experience with it. So let's just get right into the writing because that's
sure.
where my brain is already anyway. The thing about this episode where it kind of falls off the rails is I feel like it ultimately tries to do too much. There's just too much going on. And I think that part of it was based out of fear. Like there was this fear amongst the writing team, if we can even call it that, the writer, the director, the producers, etc., that they had to check some boxes. And like one of those boxes is Sam has to get into a fight. You know, yep. One of those boxes is we have to, you know, there has to be an inciting incident for this mother's hatred of Machiko. You know, there's got to be this obstacle between Machiko and Sam. And, you know, they throw all these things in. And ultimately what ends up happening to me is we get an episode where, to me, none of it really lands. You know, I don't buy it. And the biggest, the you know, if I can get hyperbolic for a second, the most unforgivable sin that the episode makes, as far as I'm concerned, is that there is no justification whatsoever for the mother's reversal at the end of the episode. You know, we don't, all we get,
other than this, we gotta wrap this up.
Exactly. Yeah. We gotta wrap. Exactly. Yeah. So I don't feel like the episode, holds together. You know, it just kind of collapses under the weight of all of these, you know, additional, bits, whether it's Naomi, or, you know, Rusty, you know, and obviously, you know, Lenora, unfortunately, I feel like it doesn't hold together. And the reason why I say unfortunately is because this time around, the first almost half of the episode, I was really enjoying. I was enjoying the interplay between Machiko and Sam a great deal. Mm-hmm. Even though I would argue that the actor playing Lenora maybe overdoes it with her indignance, you know, at Machiko, to the point where it just feels like it's just, you know, I am mean, so I am mean. You know, it doesn't, mm-hmm. like you don't get any idea where it's coming from. But even in spite of that, I was enjoying a lot of that. And again, the interactions between Sam and Machiko in particular are really well done. And even once we get to the picnic, where I think is where things really, you know, start to fall apart for me, right before the picnic, actually. But even when we get to the picnic, there's still some nice stuff between Sam and Machiko. That said, you know, the stuff about Eileen, it just doesn't track for me. You know, this woman is grieving the loss of her daughter and, you know, obviously having difficulty with that. I could understand her, you know, taking it out on people. But that's not a reason for her to be a bigot against her son's wife. Like, it just doesn't track for me at all. And I get that people, you know, take their hurt and their pain and direct it in different avenues, but it just doesn't, it part of it, I don't know if that's the writing or if that's the acting, but it doesn't work for me. Anyway, this is, for me, this is like the first episode in the series that really like just kind of fails, for me. And it's too bad because there are some things to like about it. So, surprisingly enough, I toyed with actually going a little higher than this, but I wrote my initial score down before the episode was over, and then by the end of the episode, I adjusted my score down a notch, so my final score for the writing was a 5.
Wow. Okay.
It had been a 6.
Sure. Okay. I hear a lot of what you're saying in this, but as I was watching the episode this time, and honestly, I cannot remember what my thoughts were when we did it on... when we did our original deep dive, what I remember is that you took such a hard angle on it one way. I think I felt like just for the sake of a good discussion, I had to go the other way. So watching it this time, like I really didn't know like what to expect to feel going in. I really liked the episode, wow. Sitting it down, watching it this time. And a lot of, you know, this episode sometimes draws comparisons to Color of Truth. But watching it this time, a comparison that I was starting to make in my head, which I don't think we've made before, is Thou Shalt Not, which I think is interesting because Thou Shalt Not is one of your favorite episodes.
There I can tell you, I had the thought as well. I'm going to let you finish, but I can tell you why I disagree completely with that. Go ahead.
Okay. But it does have those melodramatic elements to it. It does have even the element of a deceased child, which motivates the actions of one of the characters. And just for those two, like I felt like that connection in my head. And also like the connection with Color of Truth, which is also one of the best episodes of the entire series, obviously. You know, things that, you know, like all of the interchange between Sam and Machiko. I love those exchanges. I love, and there's the one scene, a scene that I completely forgot about, is when Naomi is trying to get Sam, Charlie, to say that he loves Machiko. And where like Sam has that hiccup where he can't say that he loves Machiko because he's not her.
Right.
Which I find it's like, oh God, Sam, you are so adorable and naive and just like Boy Scout. Just suck it up and own the fact that you're in somebody else's body and just say what you need to say in that moment. I think there was some there's some very overall, it's a very beautiful episode, and it stumbles in that one. Rusty is very broadly drawn, like absolutely no dimension whatsoever. Like you said, like the fact that we got to have Sam in a fight, like we did not need that at the end. That's where they, like you said, they got to start ticking off the boxes. Lenora's coming around at the end. I think the episode could have done better if they had revealed one, the deceased child earlier. I can't remember the child's name now off the top of my head. Eileen, if they had revealed the whole situation with Eileen earlier and not like smack dab in the middle of an episode or middle of the episode. And as far as the way Lenora acts, I think they could have gone further with it. Like, she obviously feels like she is the embarrassment of the town because of the situation involving Eileen. I have no doubt that the town did treat her differently because, you know, we're in a 1950s like rural town. And so, yeah, pregnant child who commits suicide. I'm sure the things did go that way. If we had seen like the townspeople act in a weird way towards Lenora in some way, like at the picnic or something, that kind of like justify the way that she felt.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. But since
we don't get that, Lenora's reaction to Machiko does seem over the top. So there are moments in the writing, like I said, it's something I wish, like, I didn't need any of the violence in the third act of the thing. Like, they could have dispensed Rusty with like him being shamed at the baseball game like he was.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they could have just taken that just a little bit more, and it could have been like, I can't remember this, the boyfriend being shamed at the end of Kamikaze Kid.
Oh, right. Yes.
You know what I mean? You know, just the townspeople just going, Rusty, God damn it, you got to get your shit together. No.
Yeah. Right.
This is not how we behave.
Because there are other townspeople that are so nice to her and so supportive of Sam/Charlie. And so, which is great. I love that because it's the opposite of another episode that I'm not a huge fan of, which is Raped, where it's like everyone is a jerk to her/him/Sam, you know?
Yeah.
And in this instance, it's kind of nice to see, you know, a little bit more nuanced portrayal of the citizens of this community. But man, nuance is something that lacks a great deal in this episode and all other avenues.
Sure.
You know, yeah. Because mm-hmm. I'm just left questioning, like, why do we need Naomi? You know, why do we need the ending fight with Rusty? You know, where is the real true connection between Sam and Lenora? Where's the true moment where, like, anything happens that, you know, all that happens is this real self-serving monologue that she gives at the hospital, which is, I guess written all right. It's some of the acting is a little cringy, if I'm going to be completely honest, but some of that might also be on the directing with the way that it's framed. It doesn't work for me at all. And nothing says to me, especially the way that she just tears out of there. Like, the only reason she comes in is because we got to tear up the episode or we've got to finish up the episode. It's like what Al says. Oh, people like her always come around. Really? That's all you're going to give me? That's all you're going to give me is Al saying people like her always come around? Like, no, I wanted to see something between her and Sam, or even between her and, you know, her husband. I wanted there to be some moment where you start to realize that this person is actually shifting gears a little, and we don't get that. And to me, that is unforgivable of the episode. And it's the reason why the episode takes a huge nosedive in quality for me.
I'm just looking at the time. Like, we're already spending a lot of time on this category. We'll make it up with other ones. But the thing is, like, I feel like the monologue at the end, it's more about the direction than the actual performance. It's a little bit melodramatic, but also, like, to compare it to Thou Shalt Not Again, the ending of Thou Shalt Not, that last scene on the beach, is very melodramatic. I think a lot of it is in the framing of it. And like I said, we've, like, anytime you have, like, an actor, like, turn away and turn their back to the other characters while they're delivering a monologue.
Because it's not about, it's no longer about the other people. It's all about them. And it's something that, again, I can't connect with Lenora. Like, mm-hmm. I'm listening to her tell this story about her, you know, her dead daughter, and I can't even care. And the big difference between that final scene in Thou Shalt Not that you're talking about is that we're seeing these people connect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, the father is connecting to these other people in this fit of grief and rage and sadness.
Yeah.
He's connecting to the other characters. Yeah. Lenora's not connecting to anybody.
Exactly.
Except herself.
Again, I don't think that is the actor's fault. I don't think it's the writing's fault. I think it was the way it was framed.
I think it might be a little combination of all of the
above. All right. That's fair. other little moments I loved. I love Machiko at the baseball game shouting, "Kill them! Kill the ump!" Like, her getting into it. That was such a wonderful...
I love it when she picks the flowers.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful scene.
That too, yeah. And it also, it's a callback to, like, earlier, like, she's smart enough to know, like, to shake the bugs out.
Yes, right.
You know, when Naomi isn't. And I don't know how I feel about Naomi as a character and what was needed in the episode, other than she provided a good excuse for Scott Bakula to get his shirt off.
Right.
In the hay scene. I don't know.
Scott looks good.
Yeah. And also you have Al saying, tell her to put an egg in her shoe and beat it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Al is fairly broadly drawn in this episode as well. Like, he has a couple of really nice moments, but, like, the at the baseball scene where he tells Sam to give Rusty a fat lip like 47 times, you know, it's just sort of like, I don't know. Stockwell's great, but again, just it comes down to the writing. Like, the way that Al is written in this episode, it's not that he feels out of character. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's a very, you know, paint with broad strokes Al, as opposed to really kind of zeroing in on who Al is. And after two episodes in a row where we get a strong sense of who Al is, it's noticeable to me.
Yeah, that's fair. And I will say, before we wrap up, move this on, what I love about this episode, and they only do this a handful of times in the series, but, like, the events that kick off the episode are caused by Sam leaping into the middle of a situation and not fully realizing what it is, and him just setting off. Like, him just leaving Machiko behind at the bus stop.
Right.
You know, like, not to draw another comparison with Color of Truth, like, leaping in and not realizing he's a black man and sitting down at a lunch counter.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, because of these situations, you know, because of the exact moment I leaped in, I don't realize what's going on. And that creates something that kicks the episode off. But
yeah,
I like that touch.
The last thing that I'll say, as far as the writing goes, and I could, you know, I might reiterate this later, but, like, I think that the other thing about the episode that gets to me, it's something I've said, you know, other times, is I feel as though this is one of those episodes, quite possibly the first episode, where it feels like the episode happens to Sam instead of Sam happening to the episode.
That was your thing that you said a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Back. And to me, that not that there aren't exceptions, to me, I feel like that is usually a sign of an episode that, for me personally, is not going to hit the mark, because I want to see Sam affecting some sort of change. And in this episode, I don't know that he does. And again, it's because we don't really see, like, we don't actually see, we see him maybe making these feeble attempts to, you know, to get Lenora to come around or whatever. But ultimately, like, everything is just kind of happening to him instead of him happening to, you know, the leap, and that, again,
but there are
exceptions, but it doesn't work for me.
But in defense, it's hard when you don't have an action-packed episode. Like, we have an action-packed third act. It's hard when you don't have an action-packed episode, because in real life, if this were a real situation, you don't bring someone around from being a bigot overnight.
Sure.
It's slow. It takes time. And so what I see when I watch this episode is, like, Sam, like, just realizing that. Like, when they walk back to the truck and Rusty has written the vulgar thing on the side of the truck. Like, another version of this episode has Sam running across the street and getting into a fight right then.
Right.
But Sam realizes that this is not the time and the place for it. There may be other episodes that the first time that Lenore says something like really mean and bigoted, like in the living room at the house, like Sam just gives a speech like right then and there. But he doesn't, you know, he does do it right then, because realistically, that would not work.
But I can see he wouldn't be leaping around in time, putting right what's wrong. But like, I know, but I'm willing to allow. I would rather.
I get what you're saying, but I'm just saying, like sometimes it's a slow burn, and you just got to sit there for a while. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and I think that maybe that's part of the issue too, though, with Lenora, is that because she comes off as a bigot for 90% of this episode. And then we get this attempt to say that her actions are instigated by her relationship with her daughter, who's, you know, committed suicide. Again, it's just kind of like, it doesn't quite fit. You know, it just sure. The pieces just don't fit for me. And again, that's not because, you know, these types of things can't again, you know, throw our focus into different things and turn us into, you know, I don't know. Hey, let's move on.
Let's move on. Anyway, I gave it 8 out of 10.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
All right. So directing, look, I think that there are some issues with the direction of this episode, just because not everything works as it could, and ultimately you've got to lay some of that at the feet of the director. You know, there's only so much a director can do. But even looking at the way that some of the shots, are filmed, it's not as visually as arresting as other Quantum Leap episodes that we've seen. And, you know, there's not much flair to it, which is weird because, you know, this is not a director, you know, Gilbert Shelton ends up directing a few other episodes that I think he does a wonderful job with. But this episode, he just directed Disco Inferno, which I thought was great. He directed Right Hand of God, which I thought was fine. And he'll direct Animal Frat, which I think Animal Frat has some really nice stuff in it. But this just falls a little flat for me. I gave it a six.
Same here. Give it a six.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I really don't know if I have anything more to add about it than what you said. For the sake of brevity, the fact that we spent 20 minutes on writing, let's move on.
Right. Yeah. That's my fault. No. So acting, this is a weird one for me because, I want to give credit to the fact that, like, you know, anytime an actor goes into a process and puts any amount of work or effort into it at all, they deserve a 10. You know, they went and they did the job, right? And we don't know what was going on for that actor the day that they showed up to the set. We don't know what was going on between them and the director, between them and their co-stars, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I want badly to just, you know, give every actor, whoever does the gig, a pat on the back and say, like, you worked, you put effort in, you did the thing, and, you know, you deserve to feel good about that.
Sure.
That said, we're two idiots with a podcast and we talk about this sort of stuff, so I can get critical and I will get critical. And I have to say that other than our regulars, which Al isn't necessarily given a lot to do, acting wise, I think he has a brilliant moment. Dean has a brilliant moment at the wedding where he says to Sam, you know, how he went the first time, and Sam's like, I'm married. He's like, no, I'm just kidding. And then the look on his face is just sort of like, whether it was intentional or not, whether anything, you know, was planned whatsoever, it doesn't matter, because in that moment, as a viewer, he gives me something. He creates this wonderful relationship with me as the viewer where I get to decide, oh. And then later in the series, when we find out what we find out, it's just kind of like, oh, man, you know.
Yeah.
So that's lovely. And Scott is great. Although, again, I feel like for a lot of the episode, he's very passive. And so it just kind of feels like he doesn't get a lot to do. In, you know, there are so many episodes where Scott just carries the whole episode and you're just sort of like, oh, my God, he's brilliant. And I still think he's, oh, my God, he's brilliant. But I don't necessarily think that that's one of the episodes where it's like, oh, God, he put this thing on his back. And the rest of what I'm left with, for the most part, with one exception, are just these stock characters that are sometimes very over the top, that don't show me a lot of nuance or depth, and leave me wanting in the acting department. And the exception, of course, is Machiko. I think she's lovely. I think that, you know, she does such an exceptional job of playing the sense of alienation, of wanting so badly to please his parents, and kind of taking so much of this beating that she's getting, you know, this emotional and mental abuse that she gets from Lenora and some of the other townspeople. She takes so much of it in stride, and yet you can see the hurt and the pain that it's causing her. It really is a beautiful performance. I think she does a wonderful job. So all that said, I ended up giving it a 6. Mm-hmm. You know, I toyed with going a little higher, but I just, for me, and again, this is not on the actors. It could be the directing, the writing, whatever. But I just think that Rusty, Naomi, and Lenora, and even Henry are just so. They're so broad that there's nothing for me to kind of like grasp onto and connect with in the same way that I can connect with, you know, other performances.
Gotcha. I give it an 8 out of 10. And I feel like even like more, the more stock characters, like Naomi, I get everything you're saying, like what her need is in the episode. Like I know people like Naomi, you know, Yeah. You know, we try to think that they're broadly drawn, but you know, Sam, you know what the truth is. Sometimes in real life, people are broadly drawn.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's I don't know. To go anymore would be going to a whole deep dive of character deconstruction and everything, but we'll get into it. And with Rusty, by the way, the actor who plays Rusty, Patrick Massett, I didn't catch this the last time. He was actually a co-writer of the first Tomb Raider movie.
Well, I'll be darned.
just found that looking up at his IMDb. His monologue at the end about baseball is so horribly written that I almost want to go back and dock the writing now that I think about it, but I won't, because I'll just keep it where I was. But I am loathe to think how you can make anything good out of that monologue.
Yeah.
Because it was just, you know, it's like to draw a comparison to Color of Truth. You know, if we had like a moment at the end of A Color of Truth where Willie and Toad explain why they're bigots.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It would have been a similar thing. Like if we just never got that monologue and he was just a bigot because he was a bigot, and we got enough about of his baseball story at the baseball game. Like I could have filled in the blanks. We did not need any more than that.
That lends itself to the overstuffed comment that I made earlier, right? Is it's like, I feel like Naomi's got to have a story, Lenora's got to have a story, Rusty's got to have a story, and ultimately I don't feel like any of the stories really hold together that well. You know, like you're saying, Rusty's whole big story at the end, it's like, I could do without all of this. It's not very well done. Naomi's whole thing about like being there for Eileen and all this sort of stuff, it's just sort of like, what? You know, and then Lenora's big monologue, it's just sort of like, okay, everybody's got a reason. You checked that box. It's just that they don't, you know.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. And also, Al's moment at the end, that's gonna be a TikTok video that I'm gonna be posting in the next couple of days. Like I've already recorded like the video of it, but yeah, that wonderful that gift of that look that he gives,
right?
I don't know how you look at it any other way.
No, yeah, I agree. Yeah, I agree,
especially like knowing what we know. But we know, like,
right. We have the benefit of knowing, you know. But to be fair, Star-Crossed has already happened at this point. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like that episode happened. So the decision could have been made, but at that point that, like, you know, yeah, Sam's married to Donna.
Yeah, yeah.
If so, we ever get the chance, maybe we'll elucidate on it. But we all know, you know, we all know. It's like the iceberg theory. It's like everybody knows it's here underneath. We don't know. And it informs, you know, everything else that's going on. And it informs that moment with Al. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. So much so, like earlier this week, I was looking online trying to see if I could find a copy of the script for this episode. Because I wanted to see if there was anything in the stage direction around that moment.
Right.
But I could not find anything on this episode. So anyway, eight out of 10. Production.
Production values. So production values, this was pretty easy for me. I played it safe, as Dennis would say. I give it a 7. I probably could have gone higher, to be completely honest with you. And the main reason why is I feel like it feels like 1953 to, a guy like me who wasn't alive in 1953. It seems to get it right. Nothing really stands out at me as being like awful. It holds together. So yeah.
I give it a 6 out of 10. I don't do sevens, listener, because 7 is a safe choice for me. And 6, just because that entire first scene on the porch, every single line is 80 yard.
Yeah. What is up with that?
It was like they didn't even attempt to mic it when they were shooting it.
Right.
Yeah. And I know like that happens a lot with old TV shows of that era, outdoor scenes, but right. Even still, totally took me out of it alone.
And here's, I'm going to throw something out there real quick. I'm going to stand by my score, but I'm going to go ahead and throw this out there that could also be one of the reasons why I have trouble with some of the acting in the episode, because ADR can be incredibly difficult. You're basically having to manufacture all of this stuff in a booth with none of the actors that you worked with around you. You're just saying the words that you said on that day. Sometimes not even those words. You're saying different words that, sure. Something was changed or whatever. So that might be some of the reasons why I have trouble in particular with Naomi, because I feel like that scene is definitely it suffers from the fact that, again, ADR is incredibly difficult work.
Yeah.
So that's a good point. I'll stick with my 7, but that's a really good point. Mythology. So this is a really hard one for this episode because, you take it at face value. There's not much there. It'd be easy to just give this like a 1 or a 0 or whatever. I gave it a 4. The reason why I ended up giving it a 4 is because Al talks about the number of times he's been married. Again, the, whether or not Sam is married moment is well done. The fact that Sam can speak Japanese. I feel like there's enough in it that it lets us know not only new information, but reinforces some information we already knew about these characters and who they are. I feel like Sam's narration throughout the episode 2 is incredibly well done, not necessarily well done in terms of like Scott's killing it or the script is so great. But I feel like one of the things that I really enjoy about it is that you get the sense that he's becoming more seasoned now as a leaper. He's accepted kind of his role in this, filling these shoes. And I feel like that maturation of Sam is something that we have almost kind of seen in action, whether, it was supposed to be that way or not, because when we see him in Honeymoon Express, there seems to be still this kind of like, okay, I got to do this thing. I just want to go home. Oh my God, I killed somebody. There's all this sort of stuff. And yet the arc kind of, if you will, for Sam between that episode to Disco Inferno to this episode, there does almost kind of seem to be a bit of a journey there with, and I'm not saying it's intentional by any stretch because they weren't even necessarily filmed in that order, but there does seem to be, a progression towards Sam starting to get, more into his role as a leaper, like more comfortable with his role as a leaper. So
sure.
Anyway.
Sure. So what I ticked off about the mythology is I forgot in this episode that Sam speaks Japanese. I forgot that was a reveal there. And this is something that they did in the early episodes. And I hate that they got away from is that you have a scene separate from Sam where characters discuss how different Charlie is acting.
His eyes are different,
His eyes are different. There's something about him. And what I love is, like, there's a thing that's dropped in the pilot episode that they never come back to. But the thing is, for Sam to be able to leap home, everybody has to believe he's the person that he's replaced. And I just wish that was a theme that they kept revisiting throughout the show, is that, like, people can tell, like, there's a difference. Like, fundamentally, like there's just something in the eyes, fundamentally, that there is a difference. When I mentioned before, Sam finds it difficult to speak for the leapy, he can't say "I love Machiko." He has to say "Charlie McKenzie loves Machiko." Right. Just so, because like he takes it to heart, like what he says matter, what he says matters. His words matter. And of course, there's the whole Al thing. And just for the Al thing alone, I got to give it a 9 out of 10.
Okay. I can see that. I can see that. I mean, I totally understand your reasons. For me, I wouldn't go that high. You know, maybe giving it a 4 is too low. But yeah.
And then the final thing I'll say, because I forgot about this on the writing, it kind of taps into what you're saying. Lenora walking in the kimono, the bath at the end. Not, I get it as a visual, as an episode, whatever.
Yeah.
It's a melodrama, whatever. I just wish she'd just quietly slipped into the church and sat next to Henry.
Yeah.
And that's all we would have needed.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So here's something that's interesting going back and looking at my scores.
Yeah.
This is not the lowest rating I've given to an episode thus far.
Oh, yeah?
How the Test Was Won technically got 0.05 of a point less than Machiko.
Mm-hmm.
I think after some of the conversation that we've had about How the Test Was Won and an email written by a listener, Nikki Sudan, which was just a lovely email. You know, this wonderful, and we talked about it obviously in a previous episode, you know, her wonderful thoughts about How the Test Was Won. And it really did, you know, kind of give me a new perspective on the episode. And so I'm eager to see what some of our listeners will have to say about this episode that gives me new perspective. Or they can just say I'm an ass and leave it at that. But anyway, How the Test Was Won, I feel like I would actually probably rate it a little higher now. But that's not what this is about. We're just going with what we've got. So ultimately my final score was a 5.7, or 57%. I feel comfortable with that again, based off of the other episodes that we've reviewed and where we've left it. So that's where I'm at.
I came in at a 7.8. I feel the anger. I feel it.
No, it's not anger. It's just like, that's what I gave Play It Again Seymour. You know what I mean? Like, and I
oh,
feel like
sure.
It's far superior.
Get it.
No, I hey, look, I think that's one of the wonderful things about this. I think it's one of the wonderful things about art and entertainment in general, is that we should celebrate the fact that we can have these differences of opinion, right? I think that one of the things that is so wrong with, you know, any form of criticism these days is that it's always presented in a way of, I'm right about this. That, you know, there's usually no room or margin for other opinions that are given by critics, to the point where a lot of times when you read a review of something on a website or you listen to certain podcasts, you're almost made to feel, if you don't agree with the person writing this or saying this, you're an idiot. Like, there is something wrong with you. You're dumb. You're less than I am because my opinion is right. And I will never do that. I can't do that.
Sure.
You know, I think that there should be space for all of the opinions. There should be space for, you know, for everything. And if Machiko is your favorite episode of Quantum, I can't even say it with a straight face.
It's not my favorite. I will say,
no, like, I know it's, I was, not. I'm sorry.
When I sat down to watch it the other day, I didn't know what to expect, and I was very pleasantly surprised.
You know what? I was too. In spite of a lower score, I was too. And I think one of the things that this journey is doing for me, more than our deep dives did, not that I'm not happy that we did that, and I want that work to stand because it's what brought us to this point. But one of the things that's kind of amazing, in spite of, you know, some low scores here or there, is I think overall I am appreciating the episodes more. And maybe it's because it's a more casual viewing experience too. You know, last time around I'm taking notes, like, you know,
sure.
You should see the notes that I've got that we took on some of the episodes. Some of them are just like huge, like pages long. I'm taking notes. I'm doing research. I'm doing all this sort of stuff. And this time it's just like, I'm just watching an episode of TV and giving kind of my initial reactions to it. So even in spite of the low score, I will absolutely say I enjoyed this episode more this time around than I did last time. Maybe not much.
Yeah. Maybe more. Maybe. Yeah. But I will say what I remember now that we're talking about it, my major criticism of the episode last time, which I don't think was fair now that I was thinking about it, is is that comparing it to Color of Truth, like Color of Truth, like Sam was like very bold. He was taking action very quickly because he was in the life of the person who was being oppressed. Like he was feeling that oppression head on.
Yeah.
Whereas this episode, he's not. Like he's helping the person who is being oppressed. And he was a little bit more passive. And I don't think that's a very fair criticism. I feel like it's
actually, but I like it as a criticism because I think mean, there's a point there, but yeah,
sure. But could be too much to unpack in the short format that we are doing.
Sure.
Right now.
Sure.
Yeah.
I just want to reiterate that I think that there, you know, there should be space for, you know, all sorts of different opinions, you know, and then we talk a lot about like diversity, equity, and inclusion when it comes to, you know, people. And I think that ideas need that as well, you know, and when you're talking about a piece of art or entertainment, not that, you know, entertainment isn't art and art isn't entertainment, but when you're talking about a piece of art or entertainment, that you should absolutely allow space, you know, for that same way that you would with people with ideas as well, that we need to have a diversity of thought and, you know, and an equitable look at each thought and opinion that comes our way and inclusiveness for those thoughts and opinions. And so, you know, that's why I will certainly never, you know, I'm never going to shame anyone, or think they're less than, for, you know, holding a different opinion, about a TV show. Because again, I mean, I think the thing that I'm learning as we go about this process is it's almost reminding me just how much I love Quantum Leap. Not that I didn't feel that way before, obviously we're doing this podcast, but I think that sometimes with our deep dives, it became more about that, like it became more about producing the content than it did about enjoying Quantum Leap. And I don't feel quite the same way anymore. Now I feel like it's just like I'm just enjoying watching this episode, and I might not like it as much as I like other episodes, but yeah, it's just, it's a different vibe all around, and it's fun. Yeah. You know, it's been a lot of fun to do this, and it's got me, you know, super jazzed for the revival in the fall.
Yeah.
September 19th.
Yeah. We've mellowed out.
You know, I think that's just what sleep deprivation and fatherhood
do to you. Yes. We should probably wrap this up to what we got coming up here soon. So in preparation of the new series in a couple of months, either in the next spread out over one episode or two episodes, depending on planning around your moving and my vacation and everything, we're going to do an essentials list. 15 to 20 episodes that if you are completely new to the fandom or if you've come back to Quantum Leap after having seen it in years, like the 15, 20 essential episodes you need to get back into the show, get everything prepared. Like I said, you probably won't need them because I have a feeling like part of the reason that they're redoing the pilot is to make it as straightforward as possible, even for the lay viewer. But if you want to get fully prepared for the new series, we got that. And then Matt Dale, the author of Beyond the Mirror Image, who we frequently reference, he is coming out with an edition two, with a volume two. Second edition, volume one. Yes, it's going to be so big now, it's going to be split across two books. And so he's getting ready to start a Kickstarter campaign to fund the second edition, volume one. So we're going to have him on the episode. Because of my vacation, Sam may end up doing that interview solo, but just have him on the show to just kind of like talk about that. And any other situation, I would be saying, hey, go check out Matt's book and buy it now. But no, wait.
You know,
and fund the Kickstarter and get the second edition that way.
I'm really looking forward to having him back on the show. We wanted to do it, but he got involved with some other podcast. You know, we just haven't had the opportunity to have him back on, but it was something that we talked quite a bit about, you know, after we had him on initially. And, you know, we talked to him a few times after that. And even after he was on the Quantum Leap podcast, there were talks about potentially, you know,
at one point Matt was so on top of it, and kind of like he figured out, because we were like on different journeys as far as like how quickly we were putting out episodes, but he figured out we were on track to do the leap back, mm-hmm. at the exact same time, and he proposed doing a crossover episode and having us all on there. And then they slowed down, or we slowed down, life happened, and it just didn't happen. But
I think it was a little bit of a mutual slowdown, because they were kind of on hiatus for a while, and then we were very, you know, spotty,
sporadic for a while,
and
stuff.
But no, ultimately, I mean, like, obviously, if you've been listening or paying attention to our social media, we love those guys, and you know, are excited for the work that they're doing. And it's one of the things that we just want to reinforce, you know, is a sense of community going forward. Is that they, you know, there's as much as there's space for all these ideas that I was talking about earlier, there's space for all of the podcasts and you know YouTubers and TikTokers and whatever else comes along down the pipeline as we build up to the new series. So make sure you're checking them out as well, and it'll be fun to have Matt on the show, even if you're not able to join us. And you know, Matt has kind of already said that he'd come back so that all three of us could get together and chat again. Sure. As well, which I look forward to. I think the essential stuff will be a lot of fun. It's something that people have asked for, something that we've kind of hinted at a couple of times too. You know, we're not going to give like reviews of the episode or anything like that. We're just kind of give, you know, lay out which episodes we think and give a short reason why. So yeah, these next few weeks we're kind of going to get away from our revisited stuff, but we'll pick back up with What Price Gloria you know, in probably about 3-4 weeks. Sure. I'd say and then we'll just kind of keep going with the revisited stuff until the new series drops on September 19th. So mm-hmm. Yeah, it's coming. It's coming fast. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons, too, why we wanted to do the essential stuff now, is because I felt like, you know, we're sure. about 2 months out. That's a perfect amount of time for people to maybe watch some of these episodes. And maybe, because one thing we failed to mention earlier when we were talking about the teaser trailer, Peacock will pick up, or not pick up, but put the original series on streaming. Mm-hmm. So people will be able to have access to it even easier. Because Peacock will... Mm-hmm. be streaming the new series as well. I don't know sure. if it'll be a simultaneous thing like they've done with other shows on NBC, or if it'll be like the next day. We don't know for sure, but we do know that mm-hmm. the trailer did list both NBC and Peacock at the end. So
sure.
So it'll be accessible. You're not going to just have to, you know, sit down and watch it 10 o'clock on Monday nights after The Voice.
Yeah. Fantastic. Right. Exciting stuff. It's a great time to be a Quantum Leap fan.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. All right. Well, should we leap out of here?
We should leap out of here, and we will see you all soon.
All right. Take care of yourselves. Take care of one another. Thank you so much for listening. Stay safe out there. If you have a little extra money in your pocket and you'd like to throw it our way, by all means, give back to your community, find a charity that you like. And if after all of that, there's still some coins jangling in your pocket and you just really, really want to give them to Fate's Wide Wheel, visit our Patreon, help us out. Every little bit helps. It gives us the opportunity to enhance the episode and prepare for whatever's coming our way mm-hmm. when the revival series drops, as I'm sure it's gonna change the game in a lot of ways. So, but in the meantime, leap responsibly.
Bye. Can't see, you'll never know. How can we?